Hi, everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. Tuesday, December 24th, 2019. We're on the precipice of Christmas. Hope you guys are having a great holiday season. A safe one at that. And New Year's coming up. And yeah, 2020, we're on the doorstep. But we're not finished looking at 2019. And that's what this episode is. Part two, of our look back at the year that was in mixed martial arts. So April, May, and June, myself and Paul Fontaine joining me. So this was a interesting couple months. Obviously, we'll get into it here in a second. But you had some great fights. Not like a super amount of news, but there were some interesting things. If you're a hardcore fan, and some really good fights. I think this stretch was more focused on both the UFC and Bellator had some interesting moments throughout this 3 month stretch. Right? That's one thing that stands out. So more of that than the out of the cage stuff. As compared to the first 3 months of the year. But we talk about fighters getting spiked on their heads and championships changing, and there was some controversy about that. We had another UFC 2 division champion be crowned. We had a fantastic main event, co-main event for two interim titles that had probably more attention than they maybe deserved given the interim titles, but the fights themselves were awesome. And, of course, all types of other stuff. Bellator had some good, interesting stuff as well, including a fighter questioning whether or not he could compete at the highest level anymore because of his newfound love for religion. So Paul and I get into all that for about an hour and 20 minutes, and this is a good conversation. So, again, if you haven't listened to part one, you can check that out, obviously, on the website. And let's get into part two right now. April, May, and June 2019, Year in View MMA series begins now. Well, we did so great last week. We decided to do it again this week. Paul Fontaine is back, the king of Winnipeg, the ratings guru. One of them. I don't want to make Dave upset, but one of the guys that obviously handles all our numbers for ratings and giving people what they need and what they want when it comes to that. Also does quite a bit of MMA writing for us here on the website. And Paul, the people seem to like the first week, like the return, and I guess we're back for week two.
Yeah, I saw some really good feedback on the show and had a lot of fun doing it and looking forward to this one.
Yeah, same here. And that feedback is always appreciated as well. The one thing I noted that is very true, and I think we talked about this last week, is some of this stuff, a year obviously flies by, but when you look back at some of this stuff, it's like I don't even remember that happened. I mean, going back to our trying to figure out the whole like Cejudo Dillashaw title, who holds what title, what was it for, all that. Like, there's just so much stuff that happens now. It's hard to keep track.
Yeah, this stuff that we're going to get into today is a little bit fresher. So that's where I think we're going to get into some good meat and potato stuff here.
Well, let's carve it up then. Let's start with April. So for some reason, if you haven't listened to the first one, it's very simple. We go 3 months at a time, and we go through some of the major headlines, major stories, major happenings of the month, and then we will kind of talk about some of the big stuff, and then go over quick hit a lot of the other small pebbles along the big stones of the month. So April, May, and June is what we're covering this month, and we will we'll start with April. And I think, to me, obviously the big event, because it had two amazing fights on top, and this was something that when it comes to pay-per-views, unfortunately, you don't see consistently from week to week, or month to month rather, which is unfortunate these days, but that's what happens when you have so many pay-per-views. However, this show, even though it was for two interim titles, this was two of the best main co-main event combos that you're going to have. And this was UFC 236 down in Atlanta, Dustin Poirier defeating Max Holloway to win the interim lightweight title. And then the co-main event, Israel Adesanya winning a very close decision over Kelvin Gastelum to take the interim middleweight title. Quite simply, these were just two really great fights. And I remember people watching that Adesanya fight play out, and it was just it was one of those things where I've talked about before, it reminds you why you get into watching this to begin with, that fun. And it reminded me so much of sitting at home years and years ago watching Jones and Gustafson 1 and just being like, this is, it just completely just sucks you in when a fight does that. It's an awesome feeling for a fight fan. But these two fights, the show overall was decent, but these two fights, I mean, these will always stand out, linked forever in terms of their greatness.
Yeah, I just recently submitted a ballot for MMA awards for a site that I had sometimes, you know, it's a very small site, but this was my show of the year. I mean, these two fights were basically classics, and you had new champions crowned in two different divisions, which you almost never see. And they were great fights, obviously, as you mentioned. And even the rest of the card was pretty good. But I mean, they, you know, these two main events really stuck out. Holloway going up to 155 was, I mean, it's something that I think originally was this the one that Tony Ferguson was originally scheduled to face him. Yeah, yeah. So then the Poirier was brought in. This was a rematch. They'd originally fought at featherweight. And, you know, and Poirier beat him. He was obviously had the size advantage. And Holloway has always... He'd always had a tough cut to 145, and then he even had a hard time making 155, which kind of had some questioning whether or not he'd be able to get back to 145, which he did with no issues. And then Adesanya, this was like his, you know, kind of coronation as the next big thing after he beat Anderson Silva earlier in the year, which we talked about on the last show. And then this fight was just great, and it was back and forth. And I mean, it was a decision, but it was a clear decision for Adesanya, no controversy. And you know, and like you know, it was the first show on the new deal. It, you know, just a real big, real nice kickoff for them. Unfortunately, as we'll talk about later, it didn't do a ton of business, but for hardcore fight fans, it was exactly what we want.
Yeah, and I will correct you, because the Poirier actually got the opportunity, or Holloway got the opportunity, because Ferguson turned it down. The original was supposed to be Poirier Ferguson and Max Holloway getting the shot, and you talked about that a second ago. One of the things that I always think is interesting, and I will always remember this, I was thinking of this when guys go up and wait for their first fight, especially ones on relatively short notice, was when Conor McGregor went up to fight at welterweight for the first time against Nick Diaz, and talking afterwards about how, and McGregor says a lot of things, but this always stood out to me, talking about how even though you're heavier, you haven't necessarily fought at that weight before, in terms of knowing about your motions, learning about your movement in the cage, conserving energy, all those type of things, and you have to rethink everything when all of a sudden you jump up to a higher weight. And most people just assume, oh, it's a heavier weight, no problem, and you know, it's easier to do that. But for a lot of guys, it isn't. And for Holloway, you know, especially after we saw, you know, jumping ahead to, you know, December, after we saw this last weekend against Volkanovski, I mean, who knows if Holloway, you know, physically wants to keep going at 145. There's the assumption he wants to be at 155. So I still think he has obviously a pretty bright future ahead of him, even though he's a lot of fights under his belt at a young age. But, you know, I always think of this where, you know, Poirier really took that from him. But Holloway, you know, I think he was fighting at a weight he had never fought before, and everything was just different. So, in both fights and in all four guys, the best thing, one of the best things about this was no one lost anything. Losers didn't lose anything. No. Gastelum, he still is a made guy, so to speak, at 170. Holloway obviously could fall back on the featherweight title. He obviously would fight again there, and there's still some interest there at 155. So yeah, this was a case where everyone won, and especially the relatively few people that actually bought this thing.
Yeah, I like well put. Yeah, I think I was thinking of with the Ferguson thing. There was a fight at one point where Ferguson and Holloway were supposed to fight, and it was kind of a last minute deal. I think Holloway, it was the previous year where Holloway had pulled out of the fight, the week of the fight, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
And Ferguson ended up fighting, might have been Poirier. Like whatever. It's irrelevant to the points we were making, but, I agree. Like Gastelum is, you know, like he was kind of a sacrificial lamb in this case. Like you know, it was like we, you know, everybody wanted Adesanya, especially after he beat Anderson Silva, to like to go to that next level and then eventually challenge and beat Robert Whittaker. And, you know, he was kind of the heir apparent to, you know, that middleweight division has been kind of in a flux ever since really GSP, you know, beat, you know, won the title and then didn't defend it. And then it's kind of been, you know, like who's the rightful champion. And this was kind of the last step before we actually got to an actual champion. So that part of it was very satisfying for a lot of us big fans.
And you mentioned, this was the first fight of the ESPN Plus era when it comes to being exclusive for pay-per-views. And Dana White saying after the fight that Adesanya's career trajectory, if I can pronounce that correctly, is very similar to Conor McGregor's, which always makes me cringe because, you know, just trying to associate anything they can. We got to talk about Conor and all that. And also, you know, this narrative about him fighting John Jones. I don't like this. I didn't like it at all when I first started hearing it because it and later on made sense. And I can't remember who it was that compared it to. You know, when Mayweather got Canelo Alvarez early in his career and just picked him at the right time. It's kind of felt like that just because the size-wise and all that stuff didn't make a lot of sense. But anyway, there was a lot of buzz about after this, you know, what people wanted to see Adesanya fight John Jones. And at this point, I'm still not interested in seeing that yet. I want Adesanya to make his way through 185. I mean, a year from now, I could think a lot differently and probably would. But this was one of those things where I was just cringing, like, please, let's keep people in their divisions. Let's kind of kill the super fight thing for a while, the cross-divisions fights. Let's let guys – this is one of the reasons that, you know, UFC had struggled in the past, at least to me, was the emphasis taken off the importance of it being in the division and striving to win a championship. And the minute they started bringing this up, I was like, oh, please don't do this again.
Yeah, I have zero interest in seeing Israel Adesanya fight John Jones, especially at light heavyweight. If by some chance John Jones could get down to middleweight, which I don't think is possible, I'd be a little more interested in that, but I'm not really at all interested. I don't feel like having John Jones clean out his division and then bringing in guys from other divisions to have him beat them and ruin that division is any – there's no good reason to do that. I would probably be interested in seeing John Jones move up to heavyweight at this point, given that he has cleaned out the division, except for the fact that there's a lot of interesting contenders that have come up at 205. And I actually feel like some of this might be coming from the John Jones camp in that he may be, I don't know if scared is the right word, but he may be leery of facing a lot of these guys that have completely different skill sets and are entirely capable of beating him. And especially as he gets older, at some point, you know, time's going to catch up with him, and among other things, and having guys, you know, on the come up, like, you know, your Alexander Rakic and Dominic Reyes and, you know, some of these other guys that, you know, have had some really impressive runs. I mean, we even saw Thiago Santos, like, take him 5 rounds. Mm. You know, clearly Jones won that fight, but still, it's a couple of years ago, Jones would have walked through him. So I think, you know, their trajectories are kind of interacting now. And at some point, somebody's going to beat this guy if he doesn't beat himself.
So the next big kind of news item, or it's more like result, is Bellator 220 went head-to-head with a UFC Fort Lauderdale show that was okay. We'll talk about the results of that in a minute. But really, this was, you know, this got a lot of people talking, not for the in-cage action, but also really for a promo that happened after the fact. This was welterweight champion Rory McDonald going to a draw with John Fitch to retain his title. This was a welterweight Grand Prix fight, opening round fight. So he advanced to the tournament. He did this kind of weird speech talking about really just, you know, he had found God and he really didn't know if he had it in him anymore to fight and to hurt other people. And it was just really kind of this introspective thing. I will never forget this because I'm watching this. And of course they have this whole thing with, you know, 50 Cent and his champagne company. Right. And so they always have, you know, the champagne present throughout all the different fights. You have these grinning ring girls, in back of him, as he's making this very deep speech about really questioning whether he can hurt someone or not in the cage. And you have these girls just smiling back, like just completely oblivious to everything that's happening. And John McCarthy had no idea where to go with it, you know, kind of showing he's still green at doing this. And it was so bizarre. And we would see Rory fight again, but it had a lot of questions of whether or not we wanted to see him fight again. You know, this idea that maybe people do move on beyond inflicting violence on another, especially when they find religion in their lives. There was some talk about that. So yeah, this was fascinating just because it got a lot of people talking. Also on the show, Dave's favorite, Alimaleh McFarlane retaining her title by stoppage. It was a really unsatisfying one. It was a cut above her eye. And I mean, it's weird. Like the intent, and I remember that there's talk about this afterwards, you know, the intent is to inflict damage enough to stop someone. But the way it was stopped, it just really felt like flat. And so they immediately started talking about a rematch. That actually never ended up happening. Who knows if it happens someday. But I mean, I couldn't even remember who she defended the title against. So it was kind of a nobody. But still, it was just kind of as Bellator goes with these big nights, there's always something bizarre that happens. And usually always a letdown. And this one was no exception to the rule.
Yeah, I you know, off the top of my head, I mean, I could obviously Google it, but I'm not doing it to make a point. Like, I literally don't remember who it was either. I do remember Alimaleh McFarlane. I do remember the fight, and I do remember thinking that – I think part of the controversy was that people thought, well, if it was a guy, maybe the fight wouldn't have been stopped. Mm. But then, of course, later in the year, we had Diaz-Masvidal, which was – similar. I mean, you know, it was an eye injury and, it was stopped and a lot of people thought it was premature. So maybe it's just doctors doing their job, which we're not really used to. In the McDonald and Fitch fight, one thing about this that you didn't mention, I watching the fight, I thought Fitch clearly won. And I think a lot of people thought that as well. Mm. So when it came out that it was a draw, it was a little controversial in that sense. And then the other part of that was that even though he retained his title, he also advanced in the tournament despite the fact that it was a draw,
yeah,
which right. They hadn't really talked about it beforehand. And really, like in most cases, you would have the guys go an extra round, but because it was a title fight, they couldn't really do that. So it was very strange. And really, I think given that it was a tournament, maybe the correct thing to do would have been, you know, both guys are eliminated and maybe somebody gets a bye. And I think that was even brought up at one point in commentary, or maybe I was just reading it on Twitter, like what's going to happen if this is a draw? And so it was just very bizarre. And then of course you had these weird comments from Rory. So at the time you're thinking, well, why don't they just make Fitch a champion and have him move on? You know, like, I mean, obviously it's not pro wrestling, which is kind of how what we all grew up on. And that's probably maybe what would have happened. But in this case, it was like, no, we got rules and we got to follow them. And Rory's the champ and he's going to fight again. And I think it was like 6 weeks later he fought,
yeah.
Which again, like given it was a brutal fight. And the comments he made afterwards, like I literally thought maybe he was retiring, like, you know, which would have been disastrous in a way for Bellator to have this guy, you know, defend the title and in a draw and then retire. And it just kind of throws their whole $1 million tournament into chaos. So, yeah, it was just a really strange night, which is par for the course for that company.
Yeah, I remember that because I thought Fitch won as well. And that just added on this other element. Essentially, he retired, or he said he was going to retire after the fight. It was, yeah, it was a very strange night. But yeah, I did feel like the wrong guy won. The fight wasn't much right home about, but Fitch was just dominant with wrestling. No big surprise there. And McDonald fought so quickly afterwards. We're actually going to talk about him tonight.
Yeah, and well, I think one of the things was one of the rounds, and the reason it was a draw was because he got a 10-8 round in there, and which again, you know, when you see a 10-8 round, your natural inclination is, okay, that guy won the fight, you know, do whatever happened in any of the other rounds, you know, for a guy to get a 10-8 round, it's pretty strong, it sticks with you, so that's probably the reason a lot of us thought he won.
So let's we'll go through the rest of the month and then we'll hit on some of these. The other side of the coin, which was just announced that month in April, was UFC Fort Lauderdale. Jack Hermansson defeating Jacare Souza by decision. I'd say a mild upset there. surprised a lot of people. Greg Hardy knocking out some guy. That's the best way I can describe that there. Glover Teixeira dominating Ion Cutelaba, showing he still has some staying power at light heavyweight. Corey Sandhagen getting his 2019 off to a great start by defeating the always tough John Lineker. And then Mike Perry decisioning Cowboy Oliveira in a very fun fight there. And again, that show, actually, that main event, due to injuries that we talked about last time, actually was made the main event, and the show was moved to ESPN Plus. And Jacare Souza was actually, you know, he filled in at the last minute. He was actually promised a title shot with a victory there, and he would not get that night. BJ Penn was accused of not a good year for BJ Penn, accused of sexual and domestic abuse by his domestic partner, longtime domestic partner. She filed a restraining order against him. Of course, he's saying it was nothing to it. And of course, to tie on that, allegedly threatening a farmer with machete. That just kind of got thrown off to the side there. Very bizarre year for BJ Penn. We'll talk more about him, unfortunately, in one of these shows later on. Conor McGregor, we got to talk about Conor claiming that he broke his foot before the Khabib fight. Take that for what it's worth. Paulo Costa getting a violation, a USADA violation, also a New York State Athletic Commission violation for IV use, tied to what he said is a stomach medication. USADA would end up suspending him for 6 months, but that came up, and that just added more fuel to the fire that, you know, this chiseled guy was illegal, doing some bad things. Ben Askren and Jordan Burroughs squared off in a amateur wrestling match in New York City, and the reason I put this in there is because Burroughs was talking about wanting one MMA fight. Chael Sonnen offered him $25,000 on Twitter to do it, and he was just like, you know... Burroughs was basically just like, don't insult me with a $25,000 offer to this. I can get well more than that just to amateur wrestle, which no one cares about. Tough one. Well, one of their key cast members, Loden Sincade, passed away, unfortunately, at age 45. Rich Franklin getting a nod to go in the UFC Hall of Fame. Burt Watson, the man that, unfortunately, I think a lot of people forget about these days, was such an integral part of the UFC experience early on with his, let's roll. Was a guy that led so many people out to the cage and really was a key behind the scenes of UFC before he was let go. Now, he was going to start his own MMA company. Labor effort rabble-rouser Leslie Smith, you remember her from last year, getting released from UFC in a very bizarre game night situation, so to speak, signing with Bellator, of all places. And that added a lot of questions about whether she would bring those same efforts to unionize to her new home. UFC St. Petersburg, Alistair Overeem stopping Alexei Oleinik with a first round TKO, and that was about it on this show. Not a lot going on here. Ryzen, King Mo getting knocked out yet again, TKO in a fight for the vacant light heavyweight title, I believe that was it. And again, Kyoji Horiguchi winning again. One of these guys that the UFC let get away, doing big things outside the company. Darren Till, random story about Darren Till, allegedly vandalizing a hotel room and stealing a taxi. That was kind of bizarre. UFC announced a deal to do multiple shows in Abu Dhabi over the years, and also two South American shows as well. Dana White always talking about boxing, saying that he's going to make all his boxing moves after the summer. I will tell you, spoiler alert, we sit here in the middle of December, nothing has happened. Sean O'Malley and Nico Montagna were both suspended by USADA for 6 months due to various infractions there. Tony Ferguson changes his management company. That was very key because he had chosen to share the same management company as Conor McGregor. So a lot of people thought that might lead some things down the road with them. It still could. USADA admitting that our friend, Filthy Tom Lawler, could have been eligible for a lower suspension due to changes in some of their policy, which Tom did not seem to care too much about hearing. Tito Ortiz, yet again, on retiring, signing with Combate Americas, Bellator's return to Madison Square Garden in June. We'll get the aforementioned Horiguchi versus Darian Caldwell 2 signed in a rematch from their New Year's Eve show in Japan. Hanato Babalu Sobral revealing that he is having some issues related to CTE. And there it says, watch UFC for any period of time, especially the early years, knows Babalu Sobral, and was a light heavyweight for a long time, fought Chuck Liddell, and was really just a really, really tough guy. Unfortunately, in the career, we just took so much damage. And unfortunately, I think we're going to hear more of these stories down the year, throughout the years, from these guys in the, that were fighting in the 2000s and just didn't have the advantages that a lot of fighters do now. And then finally, Dana White said that Brock Lesnar is retiring and that he is working on a Stipe versus DC rematch for August UFC 241. Paul, the floor is yours.
Yeah, there's a lot there, but not a ton that really needs a lot of expansion on. I guess the things that stuck out to me here, I know I remember the UFC St. Petersburg card, and that's St. Petersburg, Russia, and rather than
Yes.
Fort Lauderdale. When I first looked at that, I was like, they had two shows in Florida in 1 month, but no, that was Russia. And the one thing I remember from that show, other than the Overeem first round TKO, was that a lot of Russian fighters lost, including, well, she's not Russian, but she's very one of the former Soviet Union. Antonina Shevchenko was upset by Roxanne Modafferi, which was kind of a big result there. Big upset for Valentina's sister. Right before Valentina was going to defend her title, which was unexpected. The other stuff, the Lawler thing, to say he didn't care may not be the right way to put it, because he was pissed. I had some conversations with him, and I mean he feels, and I believe he's right, he's owed an apology and maybe even some restitution. Like, it's ridiculous what happened to him, and really, you know, it happened to a few other people, but he's easily the most notable one. And the fact that they held him up, they wouldn't release him until, you know, right before the suspension was up, they basically prevented him from earning a decent living for a long time. And as it turns out, he very likely didn't do anything wrong. And that's just wrong. Like, I'm sorry. And that's, it just doesn't sit well. And I mean, again, he's a friend of the site, so we're going to be a little more sensitive to that. But it doesn't matter if anybody, it would have been the wrong thing. And I don't know if I'm the only one, but when Dana White said that Brock is retiring and he's working on Stipe DC for August, I thought for sure that meant Brock was going to be fighting in August. And I was disappointed when it didn't happen, because Dana says a lot of things and they're usually lies. But I know that personally what I was hoping for was that they would wrestle, that they would fight in August and then wrestle on the SmackDown debut show in August, so that, or sorry, in October. But that unfortunately never happened. And we did get that Stipe DC fight, which was a, you know, pretty good fight, and we got to see a title change, and maybe the last fight for DC. Who knows?
And the lady that McFarland fought was Veta Ortega.
Right.
The one
Yeah.
and only Veta Ortega.
Yeah. And if you gave me $1,000, I wouldn't come up with that without looking it up. And I watched the fight. And I probably watched all Vader Ortega's fights.
Oh, what an existence. What a life. What a life.
Yeah.
Let's move on to May, and May didn't really have a lot of blockbuster news or really big fights or anything like that. But it did have some interesting fights. We'll put it that way. We start with the UFC 237 in the women's strawweight division. Jessica Andrade fighting in her home country, Brazil, spiking essentially Rose Namajunas to win the strawweight belt by knockout. Rose was on her back and was looking for a rear naked choke, if I remember right, and then basically, Andrade jumped forward and Rose got knocked out, collision. Mat collided, her head collided with the mat. Mat collided with her head, whatever you want to say. And then there was a lot of talk about whether this was legal and all this stuff. And Rose ended up being okay. She has yet to fight since then, but she that may just that's really for personal reasons, not physical reasons. But there was a lot of talk about this, and people not really understanding the rules, and people saying it shouldn't be right, and all this stuff. So, to me, it was interesting because these things come up, and we've seen spikes before, and not necessarily, not intentional, but very similar moves. And we're talking about earlier with the Ortega and McFarland fight, it was almost as if because it was the women, people were like, well, maybe this shouldn't happen or something along those lines, but what have you. And so, but anyway, Jessica Andrade winning the home belt, winning the belt in her home country. Namajunas is going to enemy territory there. Jared Cannonier defeating Anderson Silva, a very weird kind of pairing when it comes to marquee value. Silva suffered a leg injury, so Cannonier won that one and did a promo, kind of calling out the Brazil fans a bit. Not exactly Covington-esque, but tried a little bit, I guess. Alex Volkanovski, a guy that would obviously have a big year. This was a huge setup for that, rolling over Jose Aldo in the third fight from the top there. And then Clay Guida decisioning BJ Penn. There was some talk about, Namajunas retiring after this. She was pretty emotional afterwards. But, you know, this had some interesting results on it and advancing some careers. Obviously, the Volkanovski win puts him in a very interesting conversation down the road. For featherweight, Jared Cannonier just, still kind of trying to slowly inch his way up to title contention. And obviously the title change on top.
Yeah, this was, like you mentioned, it was a show in Brazil. And like the Russian show I just mentioned, it was not a good night for the locals other than Jessica Andrade. You had a lot of Brazilian legends that went down on this show. You mentioned Anderson Silva and Jose Aldo, Thiago Alves. Little Nog fought on the show and got KO'd by Ryan Spann. And the absolutely legendary, shout out to Front Row Brian, Beish Cahaya, got submitted by Irene Aldana. So it was, again, not a great night for the locals, but it was a fun show. And yeah, and we got to see it again, a title change, a new champion. And Rose has never quite been the same since that Dolly incident. And I think that affected her mentally. I mean, she went on to win her fight that week, but, she's talked about that a lot. And then in this fight, which I think a lot of people had her as the underdog, but, and she kind of was dominating the first round. And then, just this happened. And that now, she immediately was talking about retirement. And we're starting to hear now she might come back, but it's tough to come back from a devastating loss like that. And, so I hope to see her back again because she's still pretty young and could have a bright future in the sport. But it was definitely a noteworthy pay-per-view and kind of a place setter for the rest of the year, as you mentioned, with Volkanovski and Cannonier and even Andrade.
I feel like I've talked about this before, but I don't like how they book guys like Anderson Silva. And I know it's the idea of, you want to try to get some of these younger guys over and kind of the next generation and so on. But these, some of these fights that Silva has been in the past couple of years aren't that big. And it just, to me,
no.
Like, he was such, his apex, I feel it's going to be one of these fires that years from now, people are just not going to appreciate how dominant he was. And it sounds crazy for those of us that have watched him and this dominant run, but I think it's actually been hurt by how these last few years have gone. They aren't really names. Mm-hmm. Just to me, he should be fighting in legend style fights or guys with like really big names and fun names. And that's why, when they were talking originally about the GSP fight, as ridiculous as a lot of people thought it was, I was all for that. Just really fun fights. Cause he's, given this current crop, he's not going to get back into title contention, but the Adesanya fight I thought was fun. That was a good idea of an interesting fight. When that was made, but fights like, Jared Cannonier just to me, I don't know. This really doesn't do much for me.
No. And then like Derek Brunson.
Yeah.
That he fought a couple of years ago. And maybe put him at 205 and have him against Little Nog, in Brazil. Like that would be a fun fight. And no matter who wins, they probably get something out of it. And, the loser, it's like, you lost to another legend and now we'll match up with another legend. And that's where you get guys like Dan Henderson at the end of his career, or Michael Bisping, or, any of these, legends. Even like a Chael Sonnen, if he was ever going to come back and fight, that kind of thing. And Anderson can be fighting at 185 or 205. And honestly, probably I'd almost rather see him at 205 at this point. And, and there's a lot of fun fights he could have at 205 with big names that are kind of still kicking around. So yeah, I agree. And it's not just him, but it seems to be like the guys, if they're willing to take those kind of fights, well, they're going to give them to them. But then there's other guys that they only want to fight if it's, against a big name and against for big money. And if you're a legend of the sport and you have the ability to write your own ticket like that, I think you should take advantage of it. And I don't think the company should be taking advantage of you. So, even the other guys on the show, like BJ Penn, he's fighting on the undercard on the prelims, sometimes even on like ESPN Plus or Fight Pass.
Yeah.
And it's like, why are you still fighting? And if you are going to fight, why not make the most of it and put him in a prominent position and at least take advantage of his name value? But most of the time when he fights, you don't even realize it until the day of the show. It's like, oh, BJ Penn's fighting today. And it's like, oh, okay. I guess I'll watch.
I still kind of want to see Sylvan Weidman 3 at 205.
Well, now would be a good time for that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, it would.
But I mean, I don't know if we're ever going to see that. But yeah, that would be. And you know what? Silva might actually be able to avenge his loss. So
yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of big fights. And Silva, I think he's still got like 5 fights left on that big contract he signed after the Diaz fight.
Bellator 221, one of the more underappreciated fighters in the sport, and he's doing his best to talk things up, but winning titles and winning 2 titles is a great way to do that. Patricio Pitbull knocking out Michael Chandler very quickly to become the latest two division sport champion in the sport. Second one in Bellator. This was obviously a big night for him. There was a lot of bad blood between the Pitbull brothers and Michael Chandler. And Patricio Pitbull coming through really quickly. And then also one of the more satisfying fights of the year, I would say Douglas Lima just crushing MVP by knockout in the semifinal. This was for all the haters of MVP and all the people waiting to see him in this moment. And as bad as that Paul Daly fight was that we talked about last week, this was amazingly satisfying in every single way. And then Jack Swagger, the man known as Jake Hager, winning pretty easily again by submission, if I remember right. And this was a pretty fun show. And I think it may just be because Bellator is always going to be seen as number two no matter what. But you know, someone like Pitbull he's a talent, and I think he's a Bellator lifer at this point. I know he and his brother just signed new contracts. I think it was maybe last year. I don't think they're going to go anywhere, but they keep plugging along their relics of the tournament era, but they have adjusted and are really just, you know, they're, like I said, they're Bellator lifers. I'd love to see them outside just to kind of gauge them against some of the other talents in the UFC and their similar weight classes, just to kind of see how they match up. But I think these guys are just going to always be criminally underappreciated. But you know, they're trying to talk the talk, and knocking out a guy like Michael Chandler, one of Bellator's faces, is a great way to get yourself over.
Yeah, this is one of the rare occasions where a Bellator show not only lived up to the hype, but where everything kind of happened the way it was supposed to happen. I guess with the Pitbull Chandler fight, no matter what happened, you know, it was going to be okay for them. Like either one, they're both Bellator lifers, and whichever guy came out with the title, I think it's a great story that Patricio became a double champion. He was moving up as a featherweight champion, and he actually came back later in the year and defended his featherweight belt because he's in the Grand Prix. So for him, like, it's rare for these guys to win the title and then defend the title, or especially to go back down and wait and defend the belt after they've gone up, you know, and then now they've got double champ. Like Ryan Bader is also a double champ, and he's talking about defending both belts too. So they do have that. And like you say, we talked about how last show, how bad that MVP fight was in the opening round of the welterweight Grand Prix. Well, you know, we got something good on this one. The other thing that happened on that card that you didn't mention was AJ McKee winning over former champ Pat Curran and running his record to 14-0. And he's one of their next big stars. And unlike Aaron Pico, they've kind of done it right with this guy. And he's in the tournament as well. And at some point, we're probably going to get Pitbull and AJ McKee Jr. And that could be a really big fight. And if AJ McKee wins, that could kind of place him as their next big homegrown star going forward. And you know, there's a nice crew of young guys they've got coming up, and I think they're all kind of training together, and it'll be very interesting to see, you know, their career trajectories from here. It's funny that with how badly they've messed up Aaron Pico, with how they're actually getting it right with a lot of these guys.
I wish they would and those are good points. I wish they would restructure I wish they would structure their prelims so they're followed suit with how the UFC does them.
Yes.
In terms of they're still if you're a major promotion, you shouldn't have to do the put guys on the card to sell tickets thing. I think it's just a bad look, especially for those people to understand how that all works. And they do these shows that are like 19 fights deep, and it's all these just local yokels and things like that. They're just, you know, whatever. But you look at some of these guys that you mentioned, some of these young guys, and you know, they have these 4 fight shows that they put on Paramount, which are they're the most random shows, like the Thackerville shows, right? The best, it's a random place in Oklahoma. that they'll put on shows headlined by, like, you know, Lorenz Larkin versus, you know, Donk B. And, you know, it's just, and like, it's like, I don't know any of these people. And then all of a sudden you see like Terrell Fortune or someone like that, you know, is a prospect they can bring along. He's like eighth down the card. No one's going to see him. And it's just, it's really weird to me. I don't understand some of the shows, like certain guys, they have main event shows, and it's weird. So I wish, you know, you make good points. I wish that in the year ahead that they would structure them more. So, cause fans are just, they're conditioned to that the prelims should matter, especially the upper end. And so if you can structure it where people are like, I need to tune in early for this, or it just, to me, it just makes a lot more sense than putting on two random journeyman guys that no one cares about that go to a decision, and it's like, it's just a waste of people's time, because, you know, the crowd never has energy because no one really knows who these guys are. But just make it in a way where these young guys coming up that you give them a little bit of shine early. It doesn't have to be the main event, but just restructure it. That's one of my many frustrations with Bellator.
They're getting a little bit better with this. Like, now that they have DAZN and the cards are simulcast on DAZN, like, a lot of times if you tune in, you know, like if the show's starting at 9 Eastern, you tune in at like 7:30 generally, you're going to get a couple good fights on the prelims. But more often than not, like, the last fight before the main event is going to be, you know, like, just looking at the card this weekend, Keone Diggs against Scotty Hale. Like, what? You know, and it's like, and meanwhile, like you said, there might be like Terrell Fortune or Tywon Claxton fighting on the undercard before that. And it's like, well, you missed that fight. And then they don't even show highlights on the main show, which, you know, they'll have Chael Sonnen and Josh Thompson and Jay Glazer just yapping about whatever rather than showing highlights from these up and coming prospects. So, yeah, it's very frustrating. You know, they have, bit of a side rant, they got two shows again this weekend.
I know.
And Josh Barnett's fighting.
I know. I just, like, I don't understand. Yeah, I just consolidate the shows and do one big show. That was one of the best things about Strikeforce. They run, they run once a month, but every fight mattered. Even the challengers events were really fun to watch, but they had them structured a way where these guys elevated from the challenger shows to the main card. But when you sat down for a Strikeforce show, it was five fights, and all the fights were good. And they had story. It was a really well built thing. I know Bellator is doing pretty well money wise, I guess, but it's just, I wish that they would do something similar to that. It just, I don't understand why that is.
It's frustrating.
It is very frustrating. So let's move on to the rest of the month. Again, not a lot of big things here, but, you know, a few happenings. Rory McDonald, we just talked about him, announced that he, you know, despite everything that happened in his promo, he's not retiring, and that he was going to fight Ryan Gracie in the summer. I think it was 6 weeks' time in the Grand Prix semifinal, the welterweight Grand Prix semifinal. Felice Herrig tore her ACL, so she was going to be out quite some time for the UFC. There was a big controversy about, did the reason that Brock Lesnar quote unquote retired was he wanted a flat fee of around, I think, maybe $15 million or something like that to fight Daniel Cormier. Everyone's saying that, you know, UFC was being cheap. They have all this money from the pay-per-view deal, and now they're not doing anything to bring these guys along, and there's a big controversy and all the stuff. Of course, Dana White shooting everything down. UFC Greenville, South Carolina, their debut, got a headliner of the Korean Zombie versus Renato Moicano. UFC Ottawa, this was a pretty fun show and a much anticipated main event. Donald Cerrone piecing up Al Iaquinta to pick up a victory there and continue his strong 2019. The aforementioned Derek Brunson defeating Elias Teodoro. And what would be Teodoro's final fight? There was a lot of controversy about that. A lot of discussion when he got released. DC Stipe Miocic 2 for that heavyweight title was booked for UFC 241, so they didn't make a waste of any time in doing that. We got Paulo Costa versus Yoel Romero booked again. And then in a very surprise fight, Nate Diaz, taking on Anthony Pettis in a fight that both guys kind of came together to make. So there was a lot of excitement for that show, one of these top to bottom stack shows that UFC likes to do now, and a lot of excitement for that one. We'll talk about that in a future show. Let's see. Robert Whittaker, unfortunately, setting a terrible record, the UFC record for the longest run without a title defense as a champion. So take that for what it's worth. Tony Ferguson said officially he was back and would get Donald Cerrone. We just talked about him at UFC 238. So a short turnaround for Cowboy there. Anthony Johnson was charged with domestic battery. UFC 236, we talked about that, the debut on ESPN Plus. It looked to have due around just sub 100,000 buys, which was not good. Again, we talked about this in the last show about the new era of not being able to get numbers as prominent as before. So, but that was a not a good sign early on for the pay-per-view. But we would soon learn, obviously, that UFC was getting paid no matter what, so it really didn't matter. Dana White on the Conor watch said he expected Conor to return in the summer, and that the Cerrone fight made sense. Of course, then they went ahead and booked him against Ferguson, so what do we know? Speaking of McGregor, the charges were dropped in that cell phone smashing case in Miami. And I'll tell you, a side note, I have actually been at the Fontainebleau, that hotel in Miami for a work conference years and years and years ago. And that club does stay open late, I'll tell you that much. And there was a lot of nice cars out front. But so I was kind of funny because they went through this whole thing and I'm like, I know exactly where that is. And I've actually stood in that front lobby before. I didn't smash anyone's cell phone, but just to know that, someone else did. And all that. But anyway, the charges were dropped in that case. Tom Dukinwah, and I throw this in there because it's a young fighter that very interesting, good-looking fighter when it comes to, a prospect level. A lot of interest there when he fought. I think it was called, not Fireball Kid, that was Takanori Gomi, but he had some cool nickname. Anyway, he decided to retire at 25 years old, which surprised a lot of people, and it was a nice reality check in terms of, people don't necessarily want to get punched in the face for that long. And retiring at 25, I think kind of, even though he's a very interesting prospect and a guy that was starting to push a little bit in these UK shows, he was like, nah, I'm good with that, and retiring at 25. And now watch, he's going to, come back next year or something. Uriah Faber, speaking of guys coming back, decided he wanted to finally return. He's going to do so at UFC Sacramento. Perfect. Against Ricky Simone, which a lot of people did not like. Cosmo Alexander won the knockouts of the year, just dropping Sage Northcutt cold 29 seconds in Sage Northcutt's one debut. Multiple facial fractures. This is one of the aftermath of this was one of the worst knockouts, I would say, almost in MMA history. I mean, just the stuff that Northcutt has gone through. He still has yet to fight. A lot of people wonder if he should fight again, but not good for Sage Northcutt. Tyron Woodley got hurt. He was out of, unfortunately, this Robbie Lawler headliner fight in Minneapolis, revealing he has chronic arthritis in his right hand. We still have not seen him fight this year. Rachel Ostovich, her ex-husband, real scumbag, got 4 years probation for the assault of her, which is just everything that is wrong with the U.S. legal system, and just terrible, 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 terrible. UFC Rochester, Rafael Dos Anjos defeating Kevin Lee in Lee's debut at welterweight, beating him up in the fourth round there. Felicia Spencer dominating Megan Anderson and then calling out Chris Cyborg. This was incredible because then she would get the fight, a month or so later, 2 months later, which just is like, what is going on here? Aspen Ladd defeating Sajard Eubanks. Eubanks was talking a lot of shit before this and, of course, missed weight. And then Kurt Heinrich picking up a big win over Carlos Jr. And then Charles Oliveira, this guy that just quietly keeps doing his thing at 155 and keeps submitting guy after guy after guy. And this one, I believe, is a TKO stoppage, I think, defeating Nick Lentz, who he seems to fight every other month. And Oliveira, a guy that for some reason they just don't give these big fights to, but yeah, he just keeps submitting guys over and over and over again. I expect pretty, some interesting things, but I hope for him for this year. Max Holloway, Frankie Edgar booked for UFC 240 Edmonton. I just mentioned Cyborg versus Felicia Spencer was made the co-main event just like a week after Spencer, who no one had really heard of outside watching Invicta fights. All of a sudden, they put her in the co-main event against Chris Cyborg Santos. Rashad Evans getting the nod for the UFC Hall of Fame. One fighting championship signing the one and only Sexyama. Francis Ngannou, JDS, was moved from the stacked UFC 239 show to fill in for the Minneapolis main event. UFC released once promising heavyweight prospect Justin Willis in a very odd situation there. Cowboy Oliveira was wanted by the cops after allegedly assaulting his ex-wife and running off with his daughter. And finally, Yoel Romero winning $28 million in a supplement lawsuit, most of which he will never, ever see. Paul, the floor is yours.
Yeah, no, there is definitely a lot there. Two of the things kind of tie together, and you mentioned the UFC 236 buy rate and how it was likely below 100,000K or 100,000, and nobody's really ever questioned that. And you'd think if that was wrong, that Dana White would have stepped up and said, "Oh yeah, these guys don't know what they're talking about. You know, we did a lot more than that," and blah 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 blah. And none of that ever came out. So you figured that that's probably a pretty good number. And based on that, then we go. You also had the other note about Brock Lesnar and wanting a flat fee. And the fact is UFC, and Dave's talked about this a lot, like there's no incentive for them to put on these big fights or to bring back these big guys and pay big money when they're going to get the same money either way. So you can run out Chris Cyborg and Felicia Spencer, or you can run out Brock Lesnar and Daniel Cormier, and UFC is going to make the same amount of money. Now, where it may come into play is later on down the road when we're coming close to the end of the 7-year contract. At that point, they might want to start building up fights or, building up buy rates. But by that point, maybe the ship sailed and a lot of these guys have moved on. And who do they bring back? Do we really want to see Conor McGregor coming back in 7 years? I don't know. I suspect we will, but who knows? You mentioned Tom DeKisno. He's actually the Fire Kid, so you're pretty
Fire
close
Kid, yes.
on that. Yeah, which again, that was we talked about the CTE in the last segment, and then we got this guy that maybe is kind of looking at the bigger picture and realizing, hey, maybe I can do other things with my life. And I had a good run. He was 3-1 in UFC and 18-2 overall when he retired. So got a lot of fights in his young time, young 25 years. So. I mean, who knows? Maybe sometimes we see these guys come back again, but I hope for his sake he stays retired because that seems to be what he wanted. And Sage, I'll talk about that a little bit too, because one of the things that nobody really talks about is the guys that go over from North America to go into one. And Eddie Alvarez is another one that went in there and suffered a loss in his first fight. And the thing is their weight system is different there. So the guys are fighting basically one class up. So your 155ers in UFC become welterweights there. And Sage, I believe it was middleweight, or whatever it was one weight class up from what he had been fighting in UFC. And the fact is, they assume, well, everyone's doing that. Well, no, the guys that are already there are actually doing the same thing that they're doing here. So these guys are walking into fights with basically guys that are a weight class bigger than they are.
Yeah.
Now, for Demetrius Johnson, he's good enough that he can overcome that, and he's managed to keep winning. But some of these other guys, and I almost feel like they're bringing these guys in on purpose to make their guys look better, if that makes any sense. And you got like a guy like Christian Lee, who they're really building up, Angela Lee's brother, who's now their lightweight champion. That if he can get a big win over a big name that they bring in from North America, it just makes him that much of a bigger star in that part of the world. So I feel like as they keep bringing in these names, eventually guys are going to start to figure it out and maybe fight at the same weight class they're used to, but not think, oh, I'm going to go over there and I'm not going to have to cut as much and I can fight at 170, which is going to be a lot easier for me. And then you're walking in there and all of a sudden you're in there against a middleweight and you're like, oh crap. What did I get myself into here? And I think that's what happened with Sage, because yeah, he was overwhelmed in that fight, and it's too bad for him. And we haven't seen him again, but he's young, and I'm sure we will at some point. And they must have paid him a lot of money, so it's in their best interest to get him out there again.
So let's move on to June as we sit here with a lot of snow on the ground. We think of the summertime. And we got our latest. This was the year of double champions, seemingly, or at least the latest iteration of it, as a really, really fun UFC 238 show. Very memorable in a lot of ways. One of the cards of the year, I would think. Henry Cejudo defeating Marlon Moraes by TKO to win the bantamweight title to go with his flyweight championship. This was I had picked Moraes going into this, and Cejudo just put it on him. He looked fantastic. Moraes looked completely overwhelmed, and this was I thought so highly Moraes going into this. He just was really just seemed to be ready for this. He was talking the talk, he was knocking guys out, finishing guys, and then Cejudo was just like, nope, I'm taking this, and just like that, becoming the latest two division champion of the UFC, really raising his stock in a lot of ways. And raising the cringe factor with a lot of his promos and all this, and, you know, just the different things he does at the weigh-ins and all this stuff. But he's trying. He's trying a lot, and for really just helping revive flyweight, and then try and do the same at bantamweight as well. Again, we'll kind of see what happens as he finally gets healthy and defends both these belts. But for this night, he was the talk of the world, the fighting world anyway, and Henry Cejudo doing some great things there. Valentin Shevchenko, speaking about getting people's attention, I mean, she just put Jessica Eye to sleep with a perfect head kick to retain her title. This was... this is one of the things people called scary because of just how out Jessica Eye was. This was incredible. This is one of those knockouts you'll see, over and over and over again. Jessica Eye eventually woke up, but she was absolutely killed by this head kick. This was unbelievable. One of the biggest knockouts of the year. Tony Ferguson, we just talked about him. He returned, defeating Donald Cerrone by TKO due to Cerrone's eye swelling up. I believe this is after the second round. People were really kind of hoping to see this go another round, even though, you know, they wanted this as a, you know, 5-round fight, obviously, but at least want to try to see it go 15 minutes, but only went 10 due to Cerrone's eye being injured. So Ferguson is back and, you know, trying to position himself towards some big fights later on throughout the year. And also Aljamain Sterling and Tatiana Suarez. Suarez I talked about a lot last year, if I remember right, but Aljamain Sterling, obviously a going concern, as Jack Encarnacion would say, at bantamweight, and just really looking good there. So this was a show that, you know, the UFC really kind of started progressing some names forward in a way that really kind of, like, they needed to push some of these guys, and I think in girls, and I think they kind of understood in this year that they need more names and more results that matter for some of these fighters that are looking to bring along. And I mean, this was perfect. You had a new champ. You had Shevchenko, who they've been high on for a long time, winning in just a spectacular fashion. And then you had some rising contenders as well. And obviously Tony Ferguson returning. This was grade A when it comes to value on a pay-per-view, no doubt about it.
Yeah, this is basically, especially in this new era, this is basically your typical UFC card that you get nowadays. You either get a fight at the top with two big names, like, say, your Diaz-Masvidal, and then everything else is just whatever it is. Or you get a kind of a stack card with either two or even three title fights at the top. And we got that here. We had the two title fights you mentioned, and then, you know, kind of maybe a number one contenders match for the BMF title in Tony Ferguson and Donald Cerrone. You know, I think these are the two kind of guys. It doesn't matter what weight class they're fighting in. You see those names and you know you're going to get a banger. And it was unfortunate that the fight was stopped, but in a way it was unfortunate, but in a way it was kind of good because Donald Cerrone was really getting beat on in that second round. And obviously if the doctor didn't stop the fight, there's no way Cerrone was quitting and he would have just taken a lot more damage, which, you know, clearly Ferguson at this point in their careers is a level above Donald Cerrone and really is a title contender. Whereas Cerrone's just kind of a guy out there that is, you know, he's going to fight in big fights, but he's probably never going to contend for a title again. Yeah. But, you know, and then good people that will be contending with titles are the two other two names you mentioned is, you know, Sterling and Suarez. And I really do feel, I think we kind of thought maybe towards, by this point, you know, at the end of 2019, that Suarez would be, you know, at a point where she was challenging for a title and she hasn't quite got there yet, but I still feel like she's on that track. It's just, I think the divisions are maybe a little bit deeper than what we give them credit for sometimes, because especially the strawweight and the flyweight divisions in UFC for the women are, you know, there's a lot of really good names there. But she, you know, she hasn't fought since June, and hopefully we'll see her again shortly.
Yeah, Suarez, I think it was not too far after this. There was she basically revealed she's been dealing with this medical issue. I believe it's with her neck, and it basically, I think she said it affected her in this fight, and I'd have to go back and look this up, but basically it was something where, you know, she goes numb in certain parts of her body, or it sounded like really serious, and the fact that, you know, potentially like paralyzation, I believe, if that's even a word, paralyzation, but she could be paralyzed. So there was a lot of fear about this. So obviously it'd be, you know, you hope for her well-being, but I mean, just from a fighting perspective, we can be selfish for a minute. It would really suck if she had to retire, because she is, I think she's got it. I mean, she is just, she, anyone that's ever seen her fight knows that she's gonna win a title if she can stay healthy. I don't think there's any doubt about that. She just has the physicality. She has the wrestling. Obviously, still has to work on the striking, but she's still so young in her career, and has the look and just has that, has the backstory and all this. So my hope is that she'll come back healthy and do some big things, because I think she's got it. But anyway. Regardless, we'll move on to Bellator 222. A lot of Bellator talk this 3 months. So Bellator returning to Madison Square Garden, and we just talked about Rory McDonald coming back very, very short notice, very questionable, to come back this soon, especially after, fight against John Fitch like that. Didn't take a ton of damage in terms of, cuts or anything like that, which made me, it made me kind of wonder, they had this spot reserved. What if McDonald had got a really nasty, gash or something like that? I mean, they're not going to have him come back and fight, if he's not cleared or all that. But regardless, he main evented the show against, was it Machida fight the main event? Do you remember?
I'm trying to think now. I don't think so because I think it was. Because I remember it was really weird because the McDonald fight was 5 rounds and then the main event was 15 minutes.
You're right. Yes.
There's two title fights, although the one they both went the full 25 minutes.
One opened and then, the show. And then, the Horiguchi Caldwell fight opened the show. Right.
And then we had the main event, which was, was only 3 rounds. As it turned out, I mean, it was TKO anyway, so it didn't matter. But but I mean, that's the right decision. It's just not something, we're used to. But, you got two big names like Lyoto Machida and Chael Sonnen. That should be your main event, even though you have two title fights underneath. But it's just not something that UFC would have done.
Very unusual. So Roy McDonald decisioned Ryan Gracie to retain the title and advance to the finals in the tournament against Douglas Lima. Adam Borix knocking out Aaron Pico in Aaron Pico's year from hell. Dave somewhere crying again as we hear this. Kyoji Horiguchi, as we mentioned, decisioning Darren Caldwell to win the Bellator bantamweight title to go with his Ryzen bantamweight belt. Lyoto Machida in the main event, defeating Chael Sonnen by TKO, and Sonnen, no big surprise, retiring after this, calling it a career. And I don't think he's going to come back anytime soon. I don't think he has the Tito Ortiz plan. But yeah, this was a typical kind of Bellator show. Again, the quick McDonald comeback. There was talk about the main event. The Horiguchi Caldwell fight was kind of boring. And then again, the fall of Aaron Pico, this prospect that. They didn't want to put against tomato cans for too long, and then they put him they ratchet up a little bit, and he is just getting knocked out flat. And I mean, he is a prospect still, but he is, man. If they're ever going to get something out of this investment, I can't remember if he fought, and we'll talk about this obviously later in the year, that I don't know if he's actually fought since this, but something isn't working, and they got to figure out what it is, or else he's just going to be another guy.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about him a lot, and really, like you said, we don't want to talk about him so much
because Dave loves him so much.
Yeah, but it's like you say, like, he didn't want to fight tomato cans for very long. He never did. Like, his first fight was against an 8-2 veteran, and then like this fight here, it's like, okay, well, you want to rehab the guy. He just had a first round KO. Let's give him an easy fight. No, they put him in there with a guy with a 12-0 record with 9 stoppages. And it's like, and it's not like built, like these are real guys that they're putting him in there against, and he's still learning. Like the guys, he was 4-2 going into this fight. Like, guys like this should not be fighting on the main stage of a big card, but he's the best wrestler in the world, and he's a Golden Gloves boxer, and blah, 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 blah. He can do this. And then he just keeps losing. And even in this fight, like, I remember, because I covered the fight for the site, and the first round, he was actually fighting more cautiously than he had in the past. So clearly he had learned from his mistakes, but then he got caught because he lost what made him special. Because, I mean, when he was on a roll, like, he did win 4 fights in a row, all by first round KO. So, I mean, the guy obviously clearly has power, but when you put him against a real fighter – you know, you're going to get caught. And unfortunately, you know, he hasn't fought since, but he's on their next big card in January. And, you know, we'll see what happens there. His opponent's 7-3. So it's a little more of the tomato can variety. And I think he needs a few more of those kind of fights, to kind of rehab him a little bit. And I mean, he's 20 years old. Like, I mean, the guy should have a big future, but, I don't know. I just hopefully we don't get any more 20-minute interviews with him on the site until he becomes a little bit closer to being a title contender.
I remember. I think it was Mark Ramondi was talking about this with Sean Alshadi and their podcast they used to do about kind of like, you know, what are you supposed to do with Pico, because they were like, I think it was Mark that said, you know, if you put him against guys his same experience level, he's going to kill them. Like he's so much better. But to me, I'm like, that's just part of it. Like when Mike Tyson was coming up, not comparing Pico to Mike Tyson, but you know, in the boxing model, you put them up against guys and they just crush them, and then they crush someone else, and then they get a little bit stiffer competition, and like it's just part of a slow build. And if I would take that alternative to have the slow build, like you mentioned earlier with AJ McKee. Someone that they just kind of bring along slowly and slowly, slowly. Instead, they were just kind of like, okay, we're going to unveil this guy. And to your point earlier, that it just backfired. You're putting him against guys that are veterans and, guys that he has no business in there being with yet. And again, they can talk about the Golden Glove stuff. They can talk about the wrestling background and all that. But it's just one of those things of... you know, there's just nothing there to the investment yet. But to your point, he's young and plenty of time to go. So, all right. So we will move on to the rest of the list and some interesting results and such here. GSP to WWE rumors. WWE and pro wrestling continues to be the junk drawer for every other pro sports, you know, throwaways or whatever, which is just bizarre. So GSP, there was talk that he had spoken with WWE, which to me just didn't make any sense at all. But anyway, there were some rumors about that. UFC Stockholm results, Anthony Smith going into enemy territory. Again, there was a lot of questions about Anthony Smith in this one because he had some, after the John Jones loss, he was saying that, you know, the had this opportunity, didn't even know if he wanted to fight again or, you know, fight anytime soon. And there's questions about his mental state in going this one. But he came through, submitted Alexander Gustin in the fourth round in his home country. Gus, don't put him on a main event in Stockholm, man. He loses every single time. He retired after the fight. And, of course, as we know, that wouldn't last too long. And then Alexander Sakic knocking out Jimmy Manoa. This is one of the year's best knockouts as well. And Manoa retired after that. King Mo, quote-unquote, retired. He would later come back and fight. Paige Van Zandt suffered another broken arm injury, and she was going to be out for 3 months. UFC 242 in Khabib, or Abu Dhabi, rather, getting the return of Khabib Nurmagomedov, one of the best, if not the best, fighter in the world against Dustin Poirier in a lightweight title unification bout. Khabib getting a new deal, which his dad said, I believe his dad said, he's the highest paid UFC fighter, which no one really believed. Dana White talking about this and saying that he still could see a McGregor rematch with Khabib, which do not sign me up for that anytime soon. Dana White also denying that Lesnar was not fighting due to UFC pay and was strictly due to his new WWE deal. Anyone that follows the business, as people do listening to this, knows that is complete bullshit. Henry Cejudo, unfortunately, getting shoulder surgery, and he was going to be out until 2020, so both the flyweight and bantamweight championships are going to be on ice. Dana White saying, yes, the flyweights would stay. UFC Hall of Fame, as they do, they induct a fight every year, and getting Clay Guida versus Diego Sanchez, adding that as a fight, which is a very good choice. There was talk about Justin Bieber against Tom Cruise in fighting in the UFC. This was a very strange story for anyone that remembers this. Yushi Shenzhen in China, getting Jessica Andrade going to her opponent's enemy territory. The second straight strawweight title fight in which to do that, fighting against Weili Zhang. We'll talk about that a lot more and obviously the implications of that fight. UFC Uruguay, UFC going there for the first time, getting Valentina Shevchenko versus Liz Carmouche as a title fight headliner. Unfortunately, we will also talk about that fight later on. UFC San Antonio getting Rafael Dos Anjos versus Leon Edwards as a headliner there. Fedor decided to re-sign for a quote-unquote retirement tour with Bellator. Bellator signing the much anticipated Matt Mitrione, Sergey Karatanov to fight for August after the 15-second nut shot ended the first one. The aforementioned Paige VanZant saying that she was going to test free agency after 2019 in her final fight in her contract, and that she made more off Instagram than fighting. So we'll see what happens there. There was a big controversy on Dana White's contender series, as Dana didn't sign this fighter from the UK, Brendan Laughlin, after he went for a double leg with about 10 seconds to go in a fight, basically saying, you know, that's not what you do. He pretty well dominated most of the fight and was, it had been a stand-up war, and you know, he just went for a double leg, as so many guys do. He said, you know, this is what it's all about. And there was a big negative backlash to Dana White. Laughlin would eventually sign with PFL. But yeah, this was a big talking point among fans and media after this happened. Juliana Pena, a female that a lot of people, including myself, thought was going to do some big things, was just out for a long time. And she had a child and just hasn't really kind of put it together, set to return to UFC Sacramento against Nico Montano. Dana White said he was pushing for his boxing in the fall, thanks to this new amazing facility called UFC Apex. Again, we're still kind of waiting to see what's going on there. Bellator London, Rafael Lovato defeating Gegard Mousasi in a majority decision for the middleweight championship, which nobody saw because the only way you could watch this was on the app or if you lived in the UK. And again, one of these strange Bellator business decisions. We'll move on. Sean O'Malley, one of these prospects we wanted to see fighting again, still has Austrian in his system. It was pulled out of this fight. A lot of people were looking forward to at UFC 239. Again, this USADA thing with Osterine and picograms and everything like that just continues to plague them, and they don't seem to have any good answers. UFC Greenville, Korean Zombie defeating Hanato Moicano in just 58 seconds, and there was not much else on this show at all. Artem Lobov beat a Pauly Malignaggi in a bare-knuckle fight, for anyone who remembers that spectacle. Jose Aldo reverses course earlier in the year. He said he was going to retire at the end of the year and then re-ups for the UFC for not just, you know, a three-fight deal, but seven fights. So getting the Anderson Silva treatment there. UFC Newark announced that Colby Covington would face Robbie Lawler in the main event. BJ Penn allegedly fights a bouncer outside a strip club, and the video was shown of this, and that would soon lead to the end of his run in the UFC. Dana White still wants to get that loss off John Jones's record, and trying to figure out some way with the Las Vegas Nevada Athletic Commission to do just that. And UFC Minneapolis, Francis Ngannou knocking out Junior Dos Santos in just 71 seconds. Joseph Benavidez stopping top contender Jussie Formiga. Damian Maia won again. However, even with the victories, Dana White still can guarantee that Francis Ngannou gets a title shot, and also saying that Joseph Benavidez was in a quote-unquote waiting period because of the injury to Henry Cejudo. Paul, the floor is yours.
Okay.
There's a lot here.
Yeah. I'm just trying to, I mean, we could talk about a lot of this stuff.
You want to
yeah,
go
the rematch? Nobody,
you want to do
the
Bieber
rematch
versus Cruz, right?
No. Well, I mean, you know, the funny thing is you see that, and then, you know, like UFC is going to make that fight, but then you saw the kind of numbers that KSI and Logan Paul did, and it's like, there's worse things they could do. And really, if ESPN wanted it, they'd probably do it. We talked about Bellator and how frustrating it is to be a fan of theirs, and that, you know, that Bellator London card was just, I mean, it's kind of funny because when they first announced it, like, they were very upfront that, okay, this is what we're doing. And then as it's coming up to the day, it's like, okay, wait a minute. Is this what's happening? And then it's like, even the day of the fight, it's like, okay, well, no, I must be able to watch this. Like, it's going to be tape delayed or something. And it's like, nope. If you want to watch it, you got to go on the app. And really, you kind of almost have to watch it live, because after the fact, it's not even that easy to find the fights on their app. And it's not on, you'd think, okay, if I have DAZN, I can just go on DAZN and I'm sure it'll be archived there. Nope. No. Even now, if I go on there, I can't find that Mousasi fight. And really, I'm not getting the Bellator app. Maybe at this point, it's out of principle, I guess. And I guess I'm just not going to see that fight. And from what I heard, I didn't miss too much, other than a title change. But Juliana Pena, I was glad to see her come back to fighting, because it meant I didn't have to listen to her commentate for a little while in Combate Americas. If she doesn't win the Worst Commentator of the Year award this year in the Wrestling Observer Awards, there's no justice.
Yep.
We'll probably talk about that a little bit later. It's like listening to Renee Young commentate Dean Ambrose wrestling John Moxley. if that makes sense. Like every fighter is like her best friend, and it's just I can't listen to it. Yeah, other than that, the Austrian thing with Sean O'Malley was just another kind of slap in the face to guys like Tom Lawler and even, you know, like Tim Means, who had a similar situation as Lawler did, but he had the money to defend himself, but he still had to put out all that money. Like it's just wrong. And I mean, and O'Malley still hasn't fought, which is, it kind of sucks. And yeah, how far the money have fallen with Artem Lobov. And I remember at one point, like in the aftermath of McGregor Mayweather, I think they were even talking about a possibility of Malinagi fighting Connor or boxing Connor. And then he ends up fighting Artem Lobov in a bare knuckle fight for which he may or may not have gotten paid. So it's too bad. Yeah, and other than that, it's just, yeah, your typical month. Dana saying a lot of things and a lot of fights being made.
Yeah, so we're two shows in here. We're through the first 6 months of the year, and again, no Connor, obviously no Rousey, no the Lesnar thing got put away, and really what I think, and we'll talk about this more with the final two shows, kind of setting up the rest of the year, was UFC really so far through his first 6 months is trying to, you could see that they have a, I would say they have a plan for the future. They really want to build the next generation of fighters. And it sounds so cliche to say, mm-hmm. but they really are. And it's tough in this era to create attractions. And to me, I'm getting away from saying stars now, but like attractions, people actually, because everyone's attention is pulled in so many different directions these days. You want, like, give me your eyeballs for 15 minutes. Give me your eyeballs for an hour. Give me your eyeballs for a couple hours. That's all that people really care about. And while some of these people right now on paper did not necessarily look like maybe they're going to be big, big attention grabbers down the road, you know, we're seeing some examples and some underpinnings, like a guy like Henry Cejudo, where it takes a couple wins and a couple opportunities and a couple, obviously big wins in his case. And he is a interesting fighter. He, to me, is an attention getter. He's not upper echelon by any means, but he's a guy that, you know, when his fights now matter, and that's a very good thing for them. And I think with Israel Adesanya, another guy where now his fights matter. They got Tony Ferguson back in the mix, and they got some of these guys, and you know, they still have a long way to go with some of the female divisions. And you know, I think some of these divisions being on ice for a bit, you know, like bantamweight with Cejudo being hurt, I mean, that hurts someone like Aljamain Sterling, for example, that maybe not necessarily taking the advantage of guys right when they're at their hottest, but really through this first 6 months, you see, you can see names and people that we talked about where we're going to be hearing about them a lot over the next, you know, 5 to 7 years. And they're kind of this older era, and even guys like Faber coming back, even, you know, Robbie Lawler kind of on the decline quite a bit. And, you know, Colby Covington and just there's, you know, there's guys that are on their way out, and there's guys that are, and girls that are right there to replace them. And this first 6 months seemed to have a real focus on that to me.
Yeah, I was thinking about this as you were talking, and just looking back at 2013 and 2014, and when they really had a steep business decline at that time, and we were talking about, like, where are all the big stars? Like, John Jones was up there, but he wasn't really a big draw. And Silva got injured in the Weidman fight and wasn't around anymore. GSP retired, and they really had nobody. And then I think they really got really, really lucky with Ronda Rousey and Conor McGregor both kind of coming up at the same time and really, like, taking the business to a level it had never gotten to before. And if that hadn't happened, or if those fighters hadn't won their fights, we would have been where we're at now 5 years ago, except we wouldn't be in the ESPN era. So they also got the added bonus of all that. So they may be still stuck on Fox, or maybe even looking at a smaller platform if Fox wasn't happy with the ratings. So it's very interesting in that sense. But I do think, like, we, you know, we tend to focus on some of the things that maybe they're not doing right. But you brought up a lot of names there, and some you didn't even mention, like a Jorge Masvidal, mm-hmm. that, you know, it's just like before 2019, he was just a journeyman fighter, and now he's must see. You know, and you've got, you know, McGregor coming back. You've got Cerrone in the mix. You've got Justin Gaethje, you know, and even guys like below that, like Edson Barboza, Charles Oliveira, Max Holloway, like these fighters that if they're on the card, you know, I'm tuning in because you know I'm gonna, you know, you're gonna get a good fight. You know, Brian Ortega, and that's not, like you said, not even to touch on some of the women like Valentina Shevchenko, Jessica Andrade, Weili Zhang, like Rose Namajunas. You know, like there's a lot of big future stars, and really I think UFC is actually doing a pretty good job of building them up in this new content era that you coined. I think we coined at the end of 2017, 2017, and the year end show I think is when we talked about that. Yeah. And it's really come to fruition in the last year and a half since then.
Yeah, it's been a couple bridge years, and they're here. I mean, they've got by with the McGregors and so on, but yeah, I think they're setting themselves up, and they've had this nice financial cushion, not only from the TV deal, but also from the pay-per-view deal as well. They don't have the pressure on them. We talked about this a lot. They don't have the pressure on them to sell a million pay-per-views every single month out. They can provide these big opportunities to guys like, you know, Israel Adesanya earlier in the year, and they, you know, a event that maybe in the past, you know, people may have thought you'd cancel it or something like that, but they, you know, they just simply put Silva and Adesanya in the main event after that fight fell through in February. And there's not that pressure there. There's pressure, but it's different. It's pressure with a very nice, comfortable financial mattress to lay on every single night. And this, I mean, this is after they, you know, sold the company for, you know, billions. So I think for the people in charge, it's, you know, it's just navigating through this, and we're going to talk about a lot over the next 6 months. You know, some of those seeds are going to kind of sprout, and some of those ideas are coming to fruition. And with guys like Masvidal, they have it's landed in their lap literally. But in other guys, it's the payoff for a lot of work. And yeah, it's a lot of fun things to talk about here over the next couple of shows, the next 6 months of the year. So, Paul Fontaine, again, you can follow him on Twitter at Paul Ace Fontaine, and he writes for MMA Draws, which is his own site, and also for our site as well. And Paul, anything else to plug?
No, you know what? Just tomorrow night. I don't know when this is going to drop, so you're either probably after the fact, but really looking forward to tomorrow night. Big December 18th show. So hopefully if you haven't watched it by the time you listen to it, go back and watch it on DVR or on demand, because I feel like AEW and NXT are going to put on some really good shows last night.
That's true. Actually, so this will air, I think I'm going to drop this on Thursday.
Okay, there you go. So last night.
Yeah.
Those shows last night were great.
Yes,
I just loved Rhea Ripley winning the title from Shayna Baszler. That was awesome.
Just will edit in like, I can't believe Chris Jericho defeated.
Jungle Boy. Jungle Jack Perry.
That's right. But
I just, you know what, all the great stuff. There's going to be a ton of great content on the website at the year end. And, you know, the Brian and Vinnie Christmas show is always a lot of fun. And the best, you know what, here's what I'll plug. The best of 2019, that'll go up the last week of December, probably, that somebody on the board always puts together. It's a great listen. And if you've never listened to it, do yourself a favor and check it out this year. There's a lot of great content, and hopefully some of our stuff will make it.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, yeah, the Facebook group I got in, for those people who are curious, I got into the Fight Game podcast group, and it's good. It's a lot of people talking about a lot of stuff when it comes to fighting and wrestling and all that as well. So if you need another time killer, and you find that, just like me, that a lot of your friends don't watch fighting, there's a nice community there that will talk about that, and it is more polite than Twitter. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. We have a lot of like good watch along threads, on, you know, when there's a big show like Raw or a pay-per-view or whatever. And it's, you know, you can be on the board or you can go on this.
I would say this. Fight Game Podcast. You can search for that on Facebook, and it's a closed group, so you have to get admission. Just tell them Paul sent you and you'll get right in. Smooth as silk.
Or Josh.
That's right.
You invite people now too. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Look at me. Look at all the power I got. So anyway, big thanks to Paul Fontaine. We will we'll drop it here and talk to you again. And also, Merry Christmas, Paul. I'm not going to get a chance to talk to you before Christmas. Before Christmas.
Merry
drops.
Christmas to you and your lovely wife and your beautiful daughter. Yeah. And she's 3 years old now. So
she is.
She's perfect age for Christmas, man. You're going to have a blast on Christmas morning, I'll tell you that.
She is a three-nager through and through, as they say. And yeah, she's got her good days and her bad days, but her good days far outweigh the bad ones. So that is good. So happy, yeah, I have to say happy birthday to your family. Merry Christmas to your family. We've talked a lot, Paul, and we'll talk to you again for episode 3 of the best, or the look back at the year of MMA. All right, big thanks to Paul Fontaine for obviously dropping by and doing that that part 2. Part 3 will come at some point next week. We'll figure out the schedule there. And obviously part 4 will be 2 weeks or so. And we'll wrap up the year that was in 2019. And it's certainly turned out to be an eventful one for sure, as they all are, of course. And let's see. Big thanks to everyone that good comments on the Ant Evans interview. I interviewed him. He was a PR head. Basically worked for the UFC for 12 years. He was involved in PR communications for the longest period of time. And then also a fight pass at the end, for about 5 years or so on the editorial side. So that was a really good conversation. So I look forward to talking to a lot. And of course, you know, if you're bored this holiday season, not that's the only reason you have to watch a show or listen to the show rather. But we have a ton of shows in the archives of Josh Nace's Punch Out. A lot of great people we talked to throughout the course of the year. So you can obviously check those out. And you know, I'm trying to think of certain ones at the top of my head that stick out. Boy, on the spot, I just put myself on the spot. Actually, I don't know. There's a lot of interesting ones we did. Recent ones that come to mind, John Nash, we talked to him about the UFC antitrust lawsuit. That was kind of fascinating to me, actually really fascinating to me, because I did basically zero clue about what was going on. So to get a lot of intel about that was really good. There was a person we talked to, and I'm completely blanking on his name, that writes for The Athletic, that focused on MMA in China. And I think that what we did that one, that was a few months ago. And that was kind of just about how, you know, the UFC, a Chinese champion, really could change everything. And then Weili Zhang actually won that. I'm completely blanking on the guy's name, unfortunately. But that was a good conversation as well. Yeah, we had a lot of good talks throughout the year. Got there's a few more people in the queue that I want to get on the show that have been holding off for a while, holding off asking, because I want to kind of just, you know, when the time was right. So my hope is that the time will be right in these next few months. People I've been wanting to chat with for a bit. So Guy Evans, that was a guy I talked to earlier this year for the Nitro book, which I really enjoyed. So yeah, go in the archives. You can find them pretty easy on the website. And if you need further recommendations, certainly ask. But those are a few of the standout ones that are top of mind right now. And of course, this series as well. So without further ado, I'm going to let you guys go, even though that sentence does not make any sense. But have a great holiday. Relax, do what you can, chill out, do your thing. Don't drink and drive, all that good stuff. And hopefully you guys are having great stuff. And obviously no shortage of stuff to listen to on our website. And so 2020 is on the doorstep. But, you know, we still have a lot more to talk about 2019. So we'll see you for part 3 of that series next week, myself and Paul. So, yeah, until next time, insert catchphrase here. Merry Christmas.